Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. We're up to episode number 17 now, and my name is Nick Engvall, and I'm here with my guys, Robbie and Mike. What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good, man. What's going on? It's Mike Guillory here. Good to see all you guys again. What's going on, Robbie?
Man, I'm having a good night. I'm honestly kind of taken back by the number Nick said. These podcasts have been flying by. So thank you everybody for listening. It's been a lot of fun, but just wowie. That's like, didn't dawn on me.
Yeah, man. We've been flying through them. So we're going to talk about some Jordan PEs tonight, but before we get into that, you know, usually we shout out somebody for leaving us a review on iTunes, but this week, unfortunately, we don't have any new reviews. So, sad face, Jordan crying meme, all those things. But if you are listening to the podcast and you can take 30 seconds to leave us a review, we definitely would appreciate it. It helps us just, you know, reach a new audience and keep us going, gives us feedback, you know. And if you don't feel like leaving a review, you can always hit us on Twitter or Instagram at Sneaker History and just let us know if we can do something to make this show better for you. But we do appreciate all of you listening and, yeah, let's just get into it. I think, I mean, so news-wise, this week there's, I don't know, I feel like there's a little shortage of news, but...
big shortage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty slow this week.
I think everybody's still lined up for the Travis Scott ones. Actually, not for the ones themselves, just for a raffle, and dudes are fighting each other behind undefeated right now. But
I saw some, there was like 100,000+ pairs of those though. So they're going to be hard, but if you have team tactics, you enlist your auntie, your mom, your dad, your brother, your girl, your boy, you might have a chance.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, man. I mean, hopefully I can score a pair, but it's one of those, you know, flip of a coin, you'll see what happens.
Yeah. On that same note, I think I might be more excited for the undefeated Kobe 4 collection that's coming down the pipe. I just saw. I guess that's like a bright orange PJ Tucker version. Man, what do you guys think of?
It looked good. I mean, Kobe 4's undefeated winning combination every time. You saw what happened with the one hit, like bangers, every last one of them. And now the 4s are just going to follow in suit. And hopefully they're a little bit more obtainable than the 1s were.
Man, my wallet's just sitting there open. There's also flies coming out of it, but it's open nonetheless. It's like waiting for me to spend that money. They have the Del Sol and the Carpe Diems coming out. And those are two.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really biased. And I say this every time, but just you put Laker colorway on a shoe that's like tastefully done. Like it's mostly black with the yellow or like a little bit of purple. And I love every one of those types of shoe colorways. So it's like the 4 and 5 are like the golden years of just a plethora of like Laker colorways on Kobe's. So,
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what the rest of the releases are going to be, right? Because I think DeMar DeRozan wore like that teal colorway. Obviously, PJ Tucker.
Isaiah Thomas has the heaters. Isaiah Thomas is the best Kobe 4. He's been killing it in Denver with some PEs. I'd see any of those released. I'd be super happy.
Yeah.
Even without his name.
What's that one pair DeMar had on? It was like the black, almost like gradient pair that had like the multicolor, like it's like the like whitish pink geometric shapes.
Yeah,
the lines.
Those are like shooting awesome. Stuff. Like, so Luka Doncic wore those also at the Shooting Stars.
Yeah.
All Star Challenge. So I believe that's where they originate from. It'd be really cool to see those kind of, 2019 prints on that older shoe. So yeah, I would love to see that one too. That'd be dope.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm excited. That's by far my favorite Kobe shoe. I did pick up like a pair of the Kobe 1 Protro, but I think the 4 is like hands down the best Kobe shoe to me.
It's more comfortable. It's so wearable. It's like you can wear that Kobe 4, like, you can wear it. I'm going to wear it to my grave. So a lot of people just wear them too. They look really good.
Yeah. Shifting gears. Let's talk about, not really shifting gears. We're just going to do this. This episode just needs to be sponsored by Undefeated, because I wanted to jump into this whole Undefeated Adidas running pack that just showed up. It's basically all military themed. There's a Climacool, an Addi Zero RC. They've got like that GSG9, a bunch of different running shoes, basically like olive, black, and orange, kind of that like MA1 bomber jacket-inspired colorway that Undefeated kind of gets all the credit and a little comfortable with, I guess. I feel like they could do other things, but it's definitely a dope colorway on a lot of these shoes, especially with like how technical some of them look.
Yeah, no, these Adidas are really nice. My favorite ones are the Climacool. I love the almost like bungee cord for laces.
Yeah,
those are cool, man. I'm just more wondering. It's a running pack. I'm trying to figure out, are these boots meant for running? The GSG9. I've never actually seen this model before until we started talking about it. And I mean, it looks like they're pretty much all weatherproof. Like they have like the rip stop on the upper, zip stuff tied around the ankle. So I don't know. Would that be considered a runner? What's going on with those?
Like Armed Forces with a 60-pound backpack running, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I am not a big fan of Adidas running outside. Like, I will only wear Ultra Boost. So I'm really feeling it's, you throw those 5 strikes on one tongue logo, it's enough for me. But what's really cool is the caging. It's like translucent, but it kind of has it does have the Undefeated print subtly going across it.
Yeah. And
that's a really nice touch. It looks like a V1 build of the Ultra Boost, like an OG build, with just a completely different kind of toe and most of the upper. It looks like it's still prime knit, but just a much different weave of it or pattern. But that's definitely my pick.
Yeah, I like that one a lot too. I mean, I like any of those like zipper kind of like covers that end up, like the Reebok, what was the Shroud? Even the Jordan 28, like all those shoes that have those kind of like, let's hide everything. I don't know why. I just really dig them most of the time.
Yeah. They're cool. It's something different. I mean, all kind of sponsored that love of the, I don't know what came first, to be honest, with the Nike glove, Gary Payton.
Yeah.
Old
yeah.
signature. I mean, there's always something cool. Just, I don't know if he's want to start the trend, but definitely one I kind of point the finger to. One of those cool models with the
shrouds
on them.
Yeah. So before we get into the Jordan stuff, the last article I think that was interesting was the conversation with the Adidas CEO Casper Rorsted, basically saying like kind of sticking up for Kanye in interviews. He's kind of doing like the press tour with CNBC, Squawk Box, Bloomberg, all those like business sites talking about Adidas' first quarter, because in Q1, Adidas was up 17.1% in net profits, which, I mean, that's bananas. Props to them for pushing that. It's hard for me to even fathom that, especially with kind of the lack of excitement in a lot of the footwear they've had in the past 3-4 months. But then, of course, like the talk of Beyonce and, you know, I think everybody wants there to be some crazy story between, like, oh, Kanye's with Adidas and, you know, Beyonce's there now, so there's going to be problems or whatever. But it's like, no, that's not really ever going to happen. People are about their business. But I thought it was just really interesting article. And I don't know, like, do you guys think that 17.1% rise in net profits is massive for a company their size? So I just don't see them. I don't know. I just don't see what shoes they're selling. I don't see enough Adidas on the street even to think that they're making that kind of an impact. But that's, I don't know, maybe I'm missing it.
I mean, clothing, like, apparel can't make up that big of a percentage of it. But just, like, I'm thinking to my day-to-day life in Portland, and you see so much, like, I see a lot of, like, Rick Owens, like, there's a whole, like, upper echelon, like, you know, group of Adidas products that most of us don't touch, but are at, like, very high price points. Maybe that's what's kind of driving it. And we also don't think of how big, like, classic Adidas are and, like, classic Adidas wear is in Europe and, like, other parts of the world. So, like, maybe it's, like, Beyonce plus everybody rocking those clothes. I don't know. Like, I also don't see it, Nick. I'm just trying to think of a reason why. But it's just, I would point towards, you know, higher-end clothing and higher-end product sales to move that kind of figure. But that's just my two cents.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're onto something, though, Robbie. When I think about it, here in Houston, it's kind of the flip side. It's not necessarily the higher-end product, but I swear, just like you said, we make shoe eye contact first. Every time I look down, if it's Adidas, it's Ultra Boost. And Ultra Boost price point is at $180 plus. So if they're making it up with just price point and not necessarily quantity of shoes, I can see that happening, because if it's an Adidas on, I see a lot of people from, you know, guys you can tell who, you know, into shoes, or just your average everyday person when I go to places around town in Ultra Boost. So, I mean, heck, if it's just about the price point, maybe they've got that sweet spot where they can find growth without having to, you know, basically sell everything out the store.
That's super interesting. Like Ultra Boost, the price point, they tend not to really go that much on sale. You see some colorways go on sale, but by and large, you're going to pay $180. And you compare that to Nike, when other than stuff that we sit there refreshing the sneakers app for, almost everything else can be bought, or at least I buy on a discount. So there's very few shoes month to month that Nike gets me to pay $180 for, unless I know I won't be able to get it at any other point in time for $180, $190, whatever you want it to be. So Adidas tends, like, in the store to kind of be less on sale with their, you know, premium shoe, like the Ultra Boost or, you know, Yeezys. You'll see Yeezys always being the same price, but then the same Jordan that dropped a similar weekend is already on sale 3 weeks later.
Yeah. So, I think that's definitely a possibility. Just reading into the one of the other articles about it real quickly, was the 17.1% rise in net profits basically was boosted by double-digit sales increases in strategic growth areas of Greater China and in e-commerce, where sales grew 40% during the period. So 40% e-commerce is bananas, too.
That's a lot.
So it makes me wonder if maybe... So there's two ways this could be. Like, the rise in profits could be compared to the previous quarter, or it could be compared to the previous year of that same quarter, right? So I'd be curious to see, like, when let's say Yeezys released. Were there more Yeezys released in the first quarter this year than there were, you know, prior? You know, obviously they're pushing the 700, which is $300 price point. You know, that's a huge amount of shoes, I'm sure. Even if most of them end up, you know, discounted on StockX or GOAT, but.
But they made the original sale, which is, that's all I need. They need that one sale from the store to whoever, because the reseller, so be it. They've already gotten their money. And I think you're right, though. Just remembering last year at this time and now, I mean, they're pushing more Yeezys out now than they ever have. I feel like we're getting the new Yeezy every 2 weeks, like we're seeing Jordans at this point.
But they don't go on sale. Like 300.
Yeah. Not at all. Not at all. But I'm saying there's just more of them to wear. And they sell out every time they come out. So that's going to put a strong boost in numbers, especially in e-commerce, because in most cases, I mean, there's still stores that get Yeezys, but it's usually few and far in between, as opposed to people going on the Yeezy store and just going ahead and just doing a reservation or whatever there. And like I say, increasing that sale through e-commerce, because there's see more now, they're kind of inflating that number.
I mean, I'll put out there the salt sat for the entire, no, not salt, the analogs sat for the entire day. And then I think there's still some sizes available, but you'll never see that for anything less than $300 though. Like, I remember when the first 700 dropped, I thought, man, who's going to pay $300 for this dad shoe? But in retrospect, that color
everyone
was super clean, and everybody now wants a pair, and they're easily like $750, you know, whatever. I think they're like $800 now, $750 around that. So like, it's just baffling how they can consistently sell. Like Jordans don't sell at $300 almost, you know. They're not. I'm not selling to me. I can't think of one pair of Jordans where I would legitimately have never owned a pair in the past and would pay $300 retail for a single pair, not a pack.
No, they tried it with the Pinnacle pack with some, like, remember the really like that nice like butterscotch logo 4.
Yeah.
And they went on sale. I mean, you can find them in outlets. Like, it just, people respect a certain price point. It's like, hey, Jordan, you're going to be between 150 and 225, 250. Cool. I'm understood at that point. I'll buy you. Easy. You just know, hey, it's going to be between $200 and $300. We're understanding. Like, both parties know what's going to happen. I'm okay to sell it. The moment they go higher, they might have some little, you know, some shakes in the sales, but probably barely, because they expect that product to be that much more expensive.
Yeah. We're all okay with that $300. Most people are, and it's just,
yeah, man, not this guy.
They accepted from the jump. Like, oh, 300, cool. It is what it is. Boom.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we could have a whole long discussion about this particular topic, but I always wonder about Jordans and why they cost so much more when there was no, you know, there's no real like engineering. You're using a lot of the old technologies. I get that materials are more expensive and labor is more expensive, but Jordans are basically double the price of what they were, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And it just seems crazy to me that that's the case. But,
well, kind of on that, the 16, 17, and 18 kind of brought on that higher price point. Like, I remember 15 still being relatively cheap. I mean, like there's still kind of a natural progression from like 12, 13, 14, 15, but then 16, 17, and 18 dropped, and they marketed those as like really technologically advanced shoes at the time.
Yeah,
so they bumped the price point up, they bump the packaging up on all those. You get some, you know, accessories, like peripheral accessories with the shoe purchase, and they kind of just, okay, people are paying $200 for these Jordan 16s, you know, Jordan 18s. We're now going to release retros at that same, like, we'll get retros to that point too, without having to really invest more in a tech shoe. Because you can get a pair of 33s and a pair of Jordan 3s like the same price, and it's night and day with what's underneath the hood. So like, yeah, it's nuts.
I think that's how they cover the cost. Think about it. They know they're not going to sell this super techy shoe for, you know, $175 up to $200. If they know that you'll buy a retro for that same cost, you can, but you'll sell a Jordan 1 for $175. And but what's going to happen, they'll cover their losses of anything that you put on sale in the performance line. So making sure that they, hey, you know what, we're going to keep innovating, but just in case you guys don't like it, we'll go ahead and cut our losses and make this back with this, with this Jordan 1, this premium model.
That's a good point. That makes sense.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think it's weird though, because if you look at, like, let's say, you know, technology, right? All of those shoes that you mentioned, Robbie, are, you know, packaged with crazy accessories, suitcases, you know, towels, all this extra stuff to, like, also, you know, at least mentally you're justifying that I'm getting all this extra stuff because I'm paying this extra price. And what's weird to me, and, like, you know, looking at, like, the shoe we wanted to talk about tonight, like the Ray Allen Air Jordan 7, right? Retail on that shoe is going to be, what, $190, I think? And
yep.
Yeah, $190.
To pay that for a Jordan 7 that, like, I love that colorway, and I would love to get a pair of these. So I'm not knocking it in that sense, but the thought of paying $190 for it is kind of like, damn, there's so many other things that I probably would want for $190 that, you know, I'd love to see newer stuff in these shoes if we're paying these crazy prices for them. But I also totally understand that Jordan Brand is essentially combating, like, the secondary market too. They don't want to give profit to, you know, a GOAT or a StockX or a Flight Club. They want to sell for the most that they can sell, because that's the way they're going to get, you know, that's the way they're going to keep their investors happy as a company. So it's just really weird to me that if we, you know, I totally agree on, like, the timing of all that stuff with, like, the 16, 17, 18, even up to, like, the 20, 23, you know, like, the prices were pushing everything higher and retros followed suit. So everything kind of went to, like, oh, you're paying a premium for Jordan product, which is totally okay. I think that for the most part, I'm happy to pay more for a Jordan product that is nostalgic. You know, like, if things are really good, you know, they did, like, the remastered stuff that, you know, you could argue that it wasn't necessarily remastered the way that we would have expected it. But that's also because they were doing, like, the Bin 23 stuff just a few years before, and that stuff was worth $250 or $300 or whatever the retail prices were, because they came with incredible accessories. The materials on them were just leaps and bounds better than general releases or even like limited stuff. So I don't know. What are you guys, do you think we'll see any kind of impact on these prices? Like, if these prices keep climbing, do you think that the sneakerhead community, or whatever you want to call it, people that are like us or that are listening to us, will back off of Jordan retros more than they already have? Because clearly we're not all buying all the retros the way we were, let's say, 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
Yeah, I just think it's, I don't necessarily think it's a price point, because, like you said, we're still buying them. I just think it's the amount that's being put out. I mean, this is kind of the age-old argument with sneakers. Do you want more on the shelf, or do you want, you know, less of options and more of one? But I feel like we're going to keep buying them. The prices, I don't see the prices going much higher, because if they did, I mean, it would screw up the resale market, and you'll start losing the resale buyers, and slowly the hype would die on things, and so you'll see more things on shelves, which will cause a price drop, like what happened with Nike basketball. They ended up having to drop prices a couple years back, because weren't LeBron's reaching up to $200 and had to drop them down to $185 again, just to get them to move product. And then I just, like I say, I think they found their sweet spot. They're going to keep on pushing this particular amount, and I don't see it moving too much in the future. If it does happen, it must be like a drastic change in either the manufacturing cost for the material cost. So something would have to be wrong for them to move the prices higher.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, I'm not like going away from buying Jordans. I'm just going into a more selective mindset for what I buy. So yeah. I won't pay $200 for a pair or $190 for a pair of Laney 5s, like the alternate Laneys that came out a couple months ago. But I'll happily pay that much for Concords, or I'll pay more for Concords. So it's just like what you do and what I do and don't buy isn't dictated by the market, but more dictated by what I already have in the closet and what I will realistically still value. Because the price is what it is, because consumers will still value a product at that price. Like, I'm not valuing a pair of, you know, winterized Jordan 12s. There's no value there to me. I don't care about the construction. I don't care about anything really about it. So I'm not just instinctively trying to buy a pair of Jordans every week like it was 2012 because it was cool. It's just like the mindset change for me personally.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess like for me, it has too, just in the sense that there's so many options now. You know, there's new Jordans every week, basically, that, you know, 20 years ago, I would have loved to have every one of them. But now, because there's so many of them out there, it's almost like we have it too good, in a sense that we know that there's going to be something else we want to spend our money on, you know, the next week or whatever. So it's like, you don't even, but that also to me, like, adds to the like lack of care, you know. Like for me, Travis Scott ones are dope, but if I don't get them, it doesn't really matter. There's, you know, something dope around the corner, you know, like SB Jordan ones, or, you know, whatever that is that's coming, just to kind of fill that void of, oh, you missed out, which is just really interesting from a consumer perspective. It's kind of a problem that only sneakers has, but I don't know. I digress. I think, you know, it also, you know, saying that, it depends on the colorways. So like one of the things we wanted to talk about in this episode was the Ray Allen, you know, supposedly PE that's going to release, June 1st, I think, about a month from now.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Basically a shoe that he wore with the Bucks. They've redone it. It looks like it's some form of nubuck instead of leather, right? But otherwise, like, I think this pulls the strings of like the guys that have been into Jordans for a long time, because now you get into player exclusive colorways, and, you know, I don't know, there's so many out there. I know, Robbie, you had some lined up to talk about. So why don't you talk about what PEs you'd like to see actually release?
Cock back and ready to go. Right. Mikal Petras has always been like a really big, like, I've always loved his shoes, but they're so obscure, but he has some really dope Golden State Warrior colorways, like 8s, 5s. I think you could even just take his name off of those and still release those shoes and have them look fantastic, kind of like they did with the Rip Hamilton. But above anything else, Michael Finley would be my go-to if I had to pick any Jordan PE, like 18 lows, the 12s, the 16s, like pretty much any shoe. Like, he was one of the Jordan brand, I believe he was one of the original Jordan brand athletes, or like second coming, like the second wave of them. So he touched pretty much any PE he wanted. So you don't see a lot of Dallas Mavericks heat either. So he kind of covers a lot of weird bases. And that's what I love about like shoe hunting and collecting and like knowledge of shoes, is like just the weird stuff you find. So I'm going to go with pretty much any Michael Finley PE, but especially like 18.5s, 18s, 19s. I like those really weird ones. So
yeah. I like the 19s. Those are cool shoes.
Yeah, I liked his. He has some really dope 20s that were different from all the rest of that release too.
They did a city pack where like Ray Allen, I think it was Ray Allen in Seattle, Finley in Dallas, Q Rich, wherever Q Rich was at that time, he had one. I think it was L.A., but he was a Clipper.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just did some really cool stuff at that time. So yeah, the 20, I'm looking at it here, is really simple, but just like it's Michael Finley. It's white, navy, and silver. It's awesome. Basic. In a good way.
Yep. Yeah. So that original group was, correct me if I'm wrong, if anybody knows, but I'm pretty sure it was Ray Allen,
yep,
Vin Baker, Derek Anderson, Michael Finley, and Eddie Jones. At least as far as basketball, because I think,
yeah,
Jeter, Roy Jones Jr., forget, there might have been a couple others outside of basketball too, but
Charles Woodson, nah, that's way too early, but nah.
Yeah, because even Bibby, so my pick for most PEs obviously would be Bibby, Kevin Martin. Actually, some of the PEs that Gerald Wallace got when he was with the Bobcats are super, super dope. I mean, black and orange 12. I'm pretty sure he had a Jordan 20 as well at some point along the way. But Bibby's kind of always been like the guy that I looked at for the PEs, just because being a Kings fan and seeing like the purple on the shoes that, you know, most, it's kind of like these Ray Allens that they're releasing. There's just not a lot of purple on any, you know, unless you're buying team shoes, it's not like a common color, in my opinion. Yeah. So
the team flows, you said team, like Jason Kidd, team flow, Lowe's.
Yeah.
Mike Finley had a team flow, like, that's some, I guess, I'm pretty sure Mike Bibby did also. That's some good stuff.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd too. Like, you think of Jason Kidd with like the Zoom flights and even like just the 13s, but Jason Kidd had a whole bunch of like team Jordans, like 19s, 5s. Jason Kidd had some good heat too. 18.5. Ooh. Yeah, I'm looking at those right now.
Going through the catalog now.
I am. I just love the 18.5. I had a pair, so it's always like a nostalgia buy, like whenever time I see it.
Yeah, I think
Was going through and
go ahead, Mike.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think there's probably so many out there too that if you're not like super diehard fan, you probably don't even realize that they exist. Cause I know like Sean Marion had some Suns PEs back in the day that were super dope that you just never saw those colors. But
oh, I remember those Matrix.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of them. Mike, was there any favorites for you?
Yeah. Mine are more recent history. Like you guys have, like the craziest knowledge of some of these PEs. Like you guys make me go study half of these. Like, man, I don't remember these until I would start talking to you guys. But mine come more recent history, like Russell Westbrook and his Jordan 3s. Both the white pair and the black pair.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, those are sneakers.
Yeah, those, and then I'm a big Rockets fan, so clearly Chris Paul had most of these before coming to Rockets, but pretty much all of Chris Paul's Clipper PEs. And then the Hornet 8s he had, all super nice. I wish they would release all of those, including this one-off PE he had. Made no sense, but the mint color Jordan 11.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a, didn't know where they came from or why he had them, but they were considered one of his PEs, and they were a clean-colored sneaker.
I'm looking at all these Sean Marions now. The Sean Marion Jordan 5 is insane. It's so clean. So, listeners, go Google Sean Marion. If you're really young, it's S-H-A-W. but there's some good stuff out there.
These are nice. Yeah, I've never seen these before. They need to release these. Like, they always do all these random Phoenix Suns colorway of Jordans, and why not throw this 5 out there?
I'd rather see this than like a random newly inspired original Jordan colorway. Like, there's so much in the vault, and that's like kind of what it comes down to, like selectiveness. It's like, I'm not going to buy a random, even if it looks kind of cool, like a random Jordan. I'd much rather have something where I remember seeing it 10, 20 years ago now, and that's instantly a connection for me. So the connection makes me want to open up my wallet. And if there's no, if there's like, it comes back to storytelling. If there's no story there behind it, there's no connection. There's no need. So.
Yeah. Make a good point there, man. Make it worth my while. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
In short, make it worth my while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, there's even pictures of old PJ Tucker planting these fives when he still played for Phoenix.
Yeah, that's been one of my favorite things about PJ Tucker is he's actually going in and digging through like the stuff that most people don't remember and busting it out and actually playing in it. To me, that's just super dope. But
I'd be digging
a tour of a sneaker room
to hide NBA money. Like, it's not even just like having NBA money. Like, people want to see him wear cool shoes. So I'm sure there's people out there who are his size. But hey, PJ, you got to wear these, and he sends them out. Like, I don't know that for
a fact. Oh, yeah.
But there has to be that connection. Like, hey, for my sake, wear my Jordan, please.
No, I'm sure that has to happen. I mean, I know he does his own hunting and his own purchasing, but I know there's some guys up there like, hey, throw this on. Make it relevant. Let's go.
Yeah. I was just going to say, too, there's like, I mean, we follow a lot of accounts on the Sneaker History Instagram account that are definitely worth following, but there's a bunch of like PE collectors that have been around for a long time. Like if you don't follow, Dependable J, Sneaker Galactus, PE Vault, Phase Two. There's just a lot of guys that have a lot of knowledge about very specific stuff. Like if you look at, Soul Supreme, or it might be Soul Supreme 23. Puneet has like one of the craziest PE collections. And I think all these guys are able to like source and find shoes that we probably wouldn't even recognize, you know, even though we're super passionate about this stuff, it's like next level of details. And to me, that's like the coolest thing about PEs. And I think about like the stuff that I'd like to see released, like being a big baseball fan, there were so many like CC Sabathia shoes that I thought would be super dope as like an actual release, or Andrew Jones when he was with the Braves or the Mets or something, where like they got turf versions of the Jordan 4 or turf versions of the Jordan 11 that obviously that shoe is probably not ever going to release. But the more you see like the cleats show up on East Bay and, you know, for like the younger kids to play in, to me, that's like a very untapped area. And maybe for collectors like the guys that we've been mentioning, that probably isn't a good thing to see those shoes actually release. But personally, I'd love to see, you know, that kind of stuff, Nike or Jordan brand jump into those kind of things. And even in like limited runs, you know, just because it helps to like retell the story of the brand that so many people don't even get to see nowadays, because, you know, everything's based on how many likes is this going to get. So you don't get to see those crazy PEs because you know, a picture of a baseball player just doesn't resonate the way, you know, Michael Jordan does on Mondays kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I want to argue with you on that one. What's his name? I can't remember what team he plays for. His name is Frazier. Correct me if I'm wrong. Baseball player. He's wearing the ones as a cleat now. I think he's been going through like some of these hype Jordans and throwing some cleat bottoms on there. And he's getting a lot of attention, at least on like the social media. And he did the Nigel Sylvester's, and then he also did the Jordan 11 low snakeskin not too long ago. He's a Yankee,
Clint Frazier.
Clint Frazier.
Yeah.
Clint Frazier. Thank you. I was like, I know it's something Frazier.
And he did the Travis Scott cut last week, or earlier. Yeah, last week.
Okay. I just saw a picture of it going through my Soul Collector today. And I just clicked on it, and he'd done a couple so far. I guess the first ones were the Sylvester ones that he had done in the beginning. Well, not beginning of the season, but a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I see. But there's just no huge market, I guess, because for cleats right now, I think eventually it will. I think once they start to lighten up, for football at least, lighten up on some of the things they can do with their cleats, I think Nike and Jordan will see the shift in the market, and they'll start slinging them out there to people to have. But I think right now it's just so hard to get that recognition and build the hype up on them that it's hard to buy them.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that when OJ had his that he could wear during, you know, warm-ups, I think they released a small run, they sold out, but they only did a small quantity because it's not something that's going to be probably blown off the shelves like if it was a Jordan sneaker or, you know, so on and so forth.
I mean, Nick said Turf 11s, and my brain went right to the Donovan McNabb and Deion Sanders. He had like a Redskin pair. I would buy those even with Turf bottoms. And they look goofy with Turf bottoms, but like, that's just like, for people that do recognize samples, I credit myself being pretty good at samples. Like, I would lose my crap if I saw that Donovan McNabb one day. It's before I die. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be pretty badass.
Come on, guys. Someone find this pair of sneakers for Robbie. I know someone out there has some kind of connection. Help them out.
Man, I know people with connections. I don't have the resources. You're talking like...
Well, we don't want to purchase them. We just want you to see them.
Big bang. Like, yeah. I need to own a law firm or something.
Or do like a weird garage sale where someone was just dumping all their stuff and just happened to find a pair.
Yeah. I mean, so like people like Dependable J and like Sample Stash, and like they have such long running connections. Like those aren't anything that's been built over even 5 years. Those are like long. People know what they're looking for, and it's just the amount of legwork those people have put in networking in the past and just like building. I mean, it kind of is their brand. Like, cause you just don't want to give really crazy stuff to anybody. You want it to be, if I was in possession of some really rare shoes, I'd want them to be cherished. So, you know, those people are going to respect the shoe, respect the storytelling, and respect the source to not say where they got it from. So,
that's a hard part nowadays. Everybody wants to, you know, I got these from this person, I got them from this person, put it all on social media. So that's definitely says a lot about those guys and the respect that they've garnered through the years of collecting.
Right.
Yeah, I actually did a list on Sneaker History of, I don't know how many people it was, probably like 30 people that are like pretty crazy player exclusive collectors, just because I'm fascinated by that world. I have a handful of them, but I'm like nowhere near like some of these guys. So I'll dig that up and I'll put it in the notes, a link to it in the notes of the show for this episode. But that pretty much wraps it up. I guess like putting out there for you guys that are listening, what PEs would you like to see actually release? You know, I think there's so many of them out there. So, I mean, man, I don't even think I could pick just one, but, what are you guys thinking? Is there room for PEs to release as general releases, or is that something that should go by the wayside? Let us know. And let us know if you're going to cop this Ray Allen Jordan 7, or if you got the plug, cause I need a pair.
Help us all out. We need 3 pairs.
Really on the plug. Really on the plug.
Before we get out of here, let's pick a shoe of the week for each of us. One of you guys want to go first, or you want me to
start it off, Nick?
So I'm gonna go a little, maybe a little funky on this one, just because I just saw them today. But the ACG Wildwood. There's like a white, black, and gum, or maybe it's like an off-white sail color. And
yeah.
I don't know, man. I just think that's such a dope shoe. I have no idea why. It's nothing spectacular. I know that all those old ACGs are not very comfortable compared to modern shoes, but something about that shoe to me, just like so simple, so dope. So that's what I'm going with.
Cool. That's a good one. Now I just saw a picture for that one too. I always like ACGs. They're super nice, but you're right. They're not as comfortable as anything else out there. Well, I'll tell you guys now, my pick is not the Neymar Nike Shock R4. It will not be that ever. But the pick I have is actually a kind of probably off the beaten path as well, is that picture of the Adidas Osmigo I've seen in that electric green color. Super cool. Yeah. It looks pretty simple, but man, I like it. I don't know when they're releasing though. It's sometime later in the summer, early fall, but they're slick looking shoe.
I could stand behind that. Mine's super random for me because I'm not a big Kevin Durant fan. Like, I respect his game, but when he went to the Warriors, I literally sold every pair of KD I own. Like, I think I had like 14 pairs, so not a lot, but I got rid of all of them. But the newest Warrior colorway of the new KD, I think that's super clean, and I want to buy it because I want to own them once he leaves and like wear them throughout the season next year as a joke.
trolling all the fans.
So it's just like, yeah, Golden State, how does that feel having him leave? So I want to get them spitefully. They're clean, and I think it'll be funny in 2 months from now when he leaves, like and a half. So it'll be funny. I always like shoes of athletes right before they leave. Like LeBron had it happen with like the kind of Miami colorway looking shoes, like green with the LeBron 12. And it happened with the KD, I believe KD 9 is when it happened, last time it happened when he left. And they saw it Oklahoma City colorway shoes. So I would think that's funny. So I like those.
Yeah, I dig that. All right, but that pretty much wraps it up. So anything else from you guys before we get out of here?
Bueller?
Just let's hope someone I hope my Rockets win tonight, guys. That's all I have.
All right.
I will second that. I hope the Rockets win.
Well, appreciate everybody taking the time to listen. And my name is Nick Engvall. You can follow me at Nick Engvall on all platforms. Follow at Sneaker History on all platforms. And you can follow the guys. Why don't you let them know how they can follow you guys?
Yeah. You guys find me at Sneaker History as well. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, under MadWatcher789. Robbie, where can they find you, bud?
You can find me on Instagram and other social media platforms at RAHBEE702.
Cool, cool. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch all of you next time. Peace.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey, what up, guys? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I just want to let you know a couple things we're working on here at Sneaker History. We're about to start a weekly newsletter to share some of the things that we find from around the web that's interesting, entertaining, newsworthy stuff. And instead of putting it all on social, maybe it's not worth posting on the blog, but we wanted it to just be on your radar. So it's kind of like a compilation of our favorite things from the week. And we'll be sending that out on Sundays just to make sure that you have the news from the previous week and maybe some news about the upcoming week in terms of releases, you know, changes in release dates, etc. You can sign up for that now at sneakerhistory.com. The second thing is that we finally launched a web store to sell some Sneaker History merchandise. So far, we've got some tees, stickers, coffee mugs, and some other goods in the works. And the money we make from this will go to pay for hosting and production of things like this podcast. You can find that on the top right menu of our website. If you do cop some merch, be sure to tag us in your social posts so we can repost. Thanks again for all your support, and we'll catch you next time. Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter.
And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.